All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. In today's episode, we are discussing more drama involving Julio Jones and his potential holdout, as well as the re-signing of restricted free agent Ricardo Allen.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, where we give you the daily scoop on your favorite NFL football team, none other than the Atlanta Falcons. So today's episode, we're going to be talking about Julio Jones. More drama. We talked about this in late May. We're going to talk about it again because of the decision, the announcement on Monday that Julio Jones would be skipping the three-day mandatory minicamp. We'll talk about the fallout of that, the impact of this, all this sorts of means. Is Julio a diva? Are the Falcons going to trade him? All that stuff and more later on the episode. But first, I do want to talk about Ricardo Allen signing his restricted free agent tender. A little less dramatic situation and sort of what that means and why did Ricardo Allen not sign earlier this offseason and why he waited until now. So let's jump right into the Ricardo Allen discussion. He's now under contract officially under a one-year $2.9 million contract, which was his restricted free agent tender. The reason that Ricardo Allen did not sign his tender until now that we're in June, when most other players typically sign like the week before the draft, because that's the deadline in which they can get an offer sheet, is because Ricardo Allen was playing the only card he had to play, the only hand he had to play. And we'll talk about this a little bit more with Julio later on in the show. But that is, by not signing his contract tender, it showed the team that he wanted a long-term deal and he was serious about wanting a long-term deal. And the only way he could potentially get them to address the contract, at least in his representation's eyes, was to not sign his tender, to indicate to the team, I'm not going to sign this until we actually have a conversation about a long-term contract. And so he signed now ahead of the mandatory minicamp, showing his superb leadership. And we'll touch upon that other diva wide receiver, number 11, and his lack of leadership later on. All kidding. But I think right now with Ricardo Allen's situation, I don't think the Falcons are really in the idea, in the planning phase of addressing his contract situation until after the season. And I don't necessarily think that's anything of major concern or has any indication that they're leaning a certain way in terms of addressing the Ricardo Allen situation. Because I do think one of the things I've said multiple times on this podcast is when I get things wrong, I try to learn from my mistakes. Why did I get things wrong? And one of the things I maybe infamously got wrong was back in 2015, I was proclaiming to the highest mountaintop, oh, the Falcons aren't going to keep Robert Alford. It's going to be too expensive to pay two premium cornerbacks. They got Desmond Trufant, who's going to be one of the highest paid cornerbacks in the league. And then on top of that, to pay Robert Alford, what he's going to get on the open market just doesn't make a whole lot of financial sense. And I was saying that back in May of 2015. Less than 18 months later, the Falcons proved me wrong by giving Robert Alford a contract extension, in addition to a couple months later giving Desmond Trufant his monster deal. And, you know, but the thing I learned from that, besides the fact that occasionally, on very rare occasions, that I am fallible, the other thing I learned is that the Falcons don't really have a plan. And what I mean by that is it's not that they're necessarily flying by the seat of their pants, but they haven't made decisions, particularly when it comes to who they're going to pay and who they're not going to pay, years and months in advance, as some people would like to believe. And they sort of let things happen and then make the decisions and play it somewhat by ear. And I think where that applies to the Ricardo Allen situation is I don't think this team has made any firm decision about whether they're going to give him a long-term contract before the season or after the season. That is yet to be played. And Ricardo Allen did the thing that he needed to do from his standpoint to sort of let the team know that he wants a long-term deal by not signing his tender. But I don't think the Falcons are going to necessarily come out of that and say, okay, well, Ricardo, well, we got to pay you now. I think there is this tendency from people, a lot of people, ever really since the Matt Ryan deal got signed, and we've discussed it on this podcast, that there is going to be some fallout to, you know, the fact that the Falcons have Matt Ryan getting paid all this money, several other current players, including Julio Jones, getting paid all this money. They got other guys coming up on contracts like Grady Jarrett, like Deion Jones, like Keanu Neal, Vic Beasley, et cetera, et cetera. And there's going to be certain players that the Falcons may not be able to afford to pay them the contract that they can get on the open market. And there's been this rush over the last, you know, 6 or so weeks, really since the draft, to try to like try to figure out and read through, you know, all the keys and, you know, a beautiful mind at all and try to figure out who's going to stay and who's going to go. And while there will be certain players, I think sitting here today in June of 2018, it's anybody's guess at this point. And I think, you know, a lot of people sort of seem to think that Ricardo Allen's going to be one of those players that's vulnerable. But I do think in the case of Ricardo Allen, a lot of it is going to be played out over the 2018 season. And in fact, probably 80 to 90% of the Falcons' ultimate decision, whether they will pay Ricardo Allen or not pay him, is going to depend on what happens over the next 6 months before 2018 is up. And, you know, Ricardo Allen could have a 5-interception season and go to the Pro Bowl. And all of a sudden, the chances of the Falcons are going to be willing to pony up to keep him go up. Or he could miss half the season and DeMonte Casey comes in and tears it up and the chances that they keep him go down. Or he could miss half the season, DeMonte Casey comes in and struggles and the chances that they keep him go up. And, you know, there's so many different outcomes that have yet to be played out, and to sit here today and think that you have any sort of insight or foresight into how this thing plays out, I think is kind of foolish. And that's sort of the thing I've learned in the years since the Alford mistake. And I think, you know, sitting here today, I think you could probably make an educated guess of sort of maybe where it is. But I think really the best odds is, at this point, is a 50-50 shot. And another factor that goes into it is, what is Ricardo Allen's market going to be? Based off of recent contracts signed over the last 2 or 3 years, the other sort of center fielder, single high safeties have signed, you probably would say it's somewhere in the ballpark around $7 million a year. Now, are the Falcons going to be necessarily open to paying that? Who knows? I have no idea. Depends on if they think Ricardo Allen's worth that type of money. And if they have the money to, you know, if they can basically, they're in a situation, while their money may be tight, they can find ways to create enough room to give Ricardo Allen that type of money if they feel that he's worth it. And so, you know, depending on how well he plays this year, maybe his market goes down. Maybe it's not as high as $7 million a year. Maybe similar to this past offseason, the free agent safety market is deflated. And instead, they can get him for $4.5 million a year. All of a sudden, the chances that they can keep him and afford him go up. Or he could have a really good year, or the safety market could be, you know, a little bit tighter, and all of a sudden his price tag goes up to $9 million a year. All of a sudden then, oh, the situation means that maybe they can afford him. And, you know, they can't afford to pay him that price, and it's smarter for them to go with a cheaper alternative like DeMonte Casey. And a lot of it depends on how much progress Casey shows this year. And I think a lot of people at this point in time sit there and look at Ricardo Allen and say, oh, he was a former cornerback that made the transition to free safety within 2 years. So DeMonte Casey is a former cornerback that should be able to make the transition to free safety within the same period of time. And I think that's part of what, you know, when we talked about the scouting reports that I did on each of these 2018 draft picks, this is part of the whole idea of, this is why you evaluate the player and don't base your analysis off of paper. And I think one of the fundamental differences between a guy like Ricardo Allen, and longtime listeners of the podcast, longtime readers of FileFans.com, know I was saying this back in 2014, which I said at the time when the Falcons drafted Ricardo Allen, if Ricardo Allen was 2 inches taller and 10 pounds heavier, he would have been a better safety prospect than Desmond Southward, who the Falcons took in the third round. Ricardo Allen was a natural in terms of his ability to, you know, in terms of, he projected better as a safety in the NFL than he did as a cornerback in the NFL, but the only thing that was holding him back as a safety was his size. But one of the benefits of him, of Dan Quinn coming to the team, is size isn't as big a deal when you play a single high safety role, because you're not necessarily being down and dirty in the box, where being 185 pounds is a major, major disadvantage, as it would be for a team that uses safeties that are a little bit more interchangeable. And you look at Casey, and one of the things I said about Casey a year ago when we drafted him is, when you look at what he was asked to do at San Diego State compared to what the Falcons are going to ask him to do as a single high safety, they couldn't be further apart. And so the idea that, you know, Casey's transition in the league is the same as Allen's transition in the league isn't really factual. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Casey can't make that transition this year or next year or whenever. We've seen flashes of him being able to show the sort of, you know, range and speed and hitting ability that you want to see in a single high safety. But you've also seen, if you've been paying attention to the film, you've also seen some areas where the wheels are turning a little bit too slowly than they need to be to really be high about his ability to play that single high safety. We saw last year, we saw at San Diego State, that he's much more effective playing closer to the line of scrimmage than he was playing in the deep half of the field. If that changes in 2018, then we can have a serious conversation about him potentially replacing Ricardo Allen in 2019. And so I think, you know, sitting here today at this point in time, do I think Ricardo Allen's going to come back in Atlanta in 2019? Maybe. You know, it's anybody's guess at this point in time. And I think the point is, these things need to play out over the course of 2018, just like it is with a lot of these players that everybody's sitting here trying to, you know, get, put on their thinking hats and their prognosticating skills to try to, you know, be ahead of the curve and say, like, this guy's not going to make it. And it's like, maybe, we'll find out. But I think everybody needs to pump the brakes, worry about the 2019 offseason when we get to 2019. Until then, just focus on 2018. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about Julio Jones, but first I want to plug Locked On Braves. For those of you guys that are going into that depression period of time during the summer where baseball is the only major sport in America that is going on, well, guess what? You can check out Locked On Braves as well as a whole host of Major League Baseball podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network, your MLB team every day. So let's talk about Julio Jones. And, you know, I think similar to Ricardo Allen, Julio basically is playing the only hand that he has to play in terms of the negotiating game that he has, which is withholding services. And I think it's a very smart move for Julio on his part because it now sort of forces the Falcons to have, at least in some form or fashion, address the issue. And we'll talk about how they may address the issue in a bit. But I think, it shows that he's also serious about the team wanting to, quote unquote, update his contract, which was the words that I think Ian Rappaport used back in May, in mid to late May, and sort of skipping mandatory minicamp is indicating that he is serious about he wants, you know, something with his contract to be addressed. We'll see whether the Falcons address it, in terms of paying him. But at the very least, now this demands that they at least pick up the phone and call his representatives and be like, hey, Julio, you missed voluntary, no big deal. Now you miss mandatory. We can, it's 3 days, no big deal. You're a 5-time Pro Bowler. We're not going to think 3 days of practice is going to ruin you. Is this going to be an issue in late July when training camp comes up? And so that's the phone call the Falcons now have to make. And, for Julio's perspective, it's a great move. And you want them to make that phone call as opposed to just sort of twiddling your thumbs and, you know, doing whatever Thomas Dimitroff is doing, riding his bike through the hills of Flowery Branch or whatever he would be doing at this point in time if he wasn't talking to Julio's representatives. So, what comes out of this conversation that the Falcons and now Julio's reps are going to have? I have no idea. But let's speculate for a moment, right? I think... Option A, the Falcons go to Julio's rep and they say, we're not going to do a deal until 2020 at the earliest because that's the final year of your contract. And we have an adamant rule that we will not break, that we will not negotiate with terrorists. We will not negotiate with players that have more than 1 year left on their contract. And if Julio continues to skip OTAs, get mini camp, and if he skips training camp, then that's on him. That's option A. Option B is maybe they go to him and they say, okay, we're a little bit amenable. We're a little flexible. We can give you a slight bump in pay and see if we can make some adjustments, some minor restructuring to your contract to see if we can update your contract. Similar to what Antonio Brown and the Steelers worked out when he had 3 years left on his contract back in 2015 and 2016. And this was something I talked about on the May episode, if you go back to the Julio Drama Alert podcast in late May, you can hear exactly what I'm talking about there. And so they're willing to have some discussions about what that number that flexibility that number is going to be in order to make Julio happy and allow him to move forward amicably, as the Steelers and Antonio Brown did when he wanted a brand new contract after Julio Jones got his contract that made him the highest paid active receiver in the NFL. Then there's option C. And maybe the Falcons say, you know what? Hey, Julio, you know, you called our bluff. We need you. We know that this team is at best a 6-10 team without you. And, you know, here's a dump truck full of money. Here's a brand new $90 million contract. And, you know, anything that makes you happy, Julio, we'll do it. We'll bend over backwards. And please don't ever skip another mini camp ever again. And, you know, I think between those three options, you know, you could adjust them, tweak them, and maybe come up with a couple more options that are between those. But those are the three main options I think the Falcons have. I think option C is probably the least likely one to happen. Don't see that happening. I don't see the Falcons setting a bad precedent from their standpoint, which is saying anytime, you know, player, if he's just unhappy with his price tag, can suddenly just hold out, withhold services, and the team will cave and bend over backwards to give him that increase that player wants. I don't think they're going to do that. So I think option C is probably not going to happen. I think option B and A are probably the likelier scenarios, with B being the most likely. I think if the Steelers hadn't already done this with Antonio Brown, then, you know, it would be a little bit more of an iffy dilemma. You know, as I explained back in May, Brown had 3 years left on his contract in 2015 and held out, and the Steelers basically bumped his contract by taking some of his 2016 base salary, turning it into immediate signing bonus, which basically Antonio Brown then immediately pockets. You know, they write him a check for X number of million dollars that's a signing bonus. But as far as the cap space goes, it doesn't has a minimal impact on the cap because it gets prorated over 3 years as opposed to all coming out in 1 year. And a concrete example of what the Falcons could do specifically with Julio that's sort of similar is that they could take, you know, Julio has a $12.5 million base salary in 2019, next season. They could take $2.1 million of that, slash that $2.1 million from that, turn that into a signing bonus. That gets prorated over $700,000 over the next 3 years, 2018, 2019, and 2020. So that changes his cap charge from $12.9 million to $13.6 million in 2018, a slight increase in pay as far as the cap load, but Julio gets to pocket that entire $2.1 million as a signing bonus, and all of a sudden, what his take-home cash is $12.6 million, which is that $2.1 million in new bonus money, plus the $10.5 million in base salary that he's already on the books to make this year, and that $12.6 suddenly pushes him up from I think 7 to 4 in terms of the highest paid wide receivers in terms of total cash value earned in 2018, in the calendar year of 2018, putting him only behind the three guys that signed monster deals in this past March, which are Mike Evans, Sammy Watkins, and Jarvis Landry, but allows him to leapfrog guys like DeAndre Hopkins that are making $12.5 million this year in cash money, so that at least he's the highest paid guy that didn't get a monster deal this offseason, which may or may not appease Julio. You know, $2 million is nothing to scoff at. You know, or maybe because the Falcons have freed up a little bit more room with their Vene Toilolo post June 1 cap cut, maybe they can push that number up. You know, who knows how much? Maybe Julio says, you know what, instead of giving me a take home cash of $12.6 million, let me take home cash of $16 million because that's what the franchise tag is for a wide receiver or something like that. Again, I'm speculating here, and that's where the negotiation comes. That's where the phone call comes. And that's where Julio, in terms of playing his hand, and the Falcons, in terms of playing their hand, that's where you negotiate over the next 6+ weeks until training camp starts. So, you know, who knows what happens. I think that's the likelier scenario of the three options that the Falcons have. Or, you know, if they decide, you know what, Julio, do what you got to do. We'll play hardball, and you know you're under contract for 3 years, and we're not planning on doing anything. We'll talk about, you know, adjusting your contract after this season or something like that. That's an option as well. So who knows at this point? And we'll talk about the quote-unquote downside of Julio Jones and his holdout in a bit. But first, I want to plug LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find MLB, NBA, and NFL content on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So the downside of Julio and his holdout. Well, you know, there are those people out there that think, you know, him holding out is hurting the team, hurting himself, all those sorts of things. You know, it's fascinating to me that it's in 2018 and people are still placing this paramount importance on OTAs and mini camps and the guy not being able to functionally work out on his own and calling out players for their lack of leadership, their lack of maturity because they don't show up for OTAs because they're out there trying to get more money. I feel like it's amazing to me that we've gone through this whole situation with the lockout back, you know, 7 years ago. We're going to go through this again, and you still have people out there that still are out here, man, like these players, man, I can't believe it. These guys are holding out for more money. You know, they're risking themselves for, you know, major, major bodily harm and brain injuries and upping their chances that they get ALS and suicide and all these sorts of things by the time they hit 40. And, you know, them wanting, you know, an extra couple million dollars to secure their long-term financial future is the worst thing that they can possibly do. But, you know, there's people out there that believe that. That's fine. You know, there's NFL players out there that spout the philosophy that, you know, true team leaders show up. You know, Tom Brady is not a true team leader because, you know, now, what, almost 20 years in the NFL, Tom Brady, what could Tom Brady not know how to do by at this point in time if he happens to skip OTAs? Oh, my God, Tom Brady. Oh, you're a horrible person, Tom Brady. But, hey, again, I'm not here to convince people otherwise. If you hold that opinion, there's pretty much at this point in time, the point of me saying all that is there's nothing I'm going to say to you that's going to convince you otherwise of that opinion. There's no way to rationalize that at this point. Now, you know, when we talk about the importance of the offseason is important. I think it can be overrated and overestimated how important it is, but it is certainly important. I think, you know, it's an important part of the preparation and part of the process to get ready for the regular season. And, you know, some may make it analogous to if you study, right, you're going to be in a better situation to get a good grade on your test. But I think football is sort of unique in the sense where that analogy doesn't quite work, because when you go study for a test and you go into that classroom, sit down and take the test, it's you, it's a desk, it's a piece of paper, it's a number two pencil in your brain. And that's the obstacle. Your brain is the only obstacle. And I guess whether or not you have a sharpened pencil are the only obstacles that really are preventing you from doing well in the test. Football, there is an antagonist. You know, it'd be much more akin to you showing up at class one day and the teacher tells you, hey, guess what? For my 22 students in the classroom, there's only one test, right? There's only one pencil. There's only one desk. There's only one chair. And now you got to fight to get to that, to be able to take that test. And that's more because when you think about it, you know, football is about hard work, preparation, muscle memory through repetitions, getting in shape, controlling the diet. All these things that players do in the offseason is important to prepare them and put them in the most advantageous situations that come the regular season when it's time for them to be able to make the throw, make the catch, make the block, make the tackle, etc., that they need to be successful, they can do so. But again, it's a little bit antagonistic in the sense that there's between 1 and 11 other guys that are trying to prevent you from making the throw, the catch, the block, or the tackle in order to be successful. And those guys are working just as hard, if not harder, than you as an individual is. And I think, you know, working out or showing up in the offseason isn't necessarily going to guarantee that Ryan Schrader is going to make that block on Ryan Kerrigan, or that Deion Jones is going to be able to successfully cover Gio Bernard, or that Keanu Neal is going to be able to lock down Jimmy Graham. You know what I'm saying? Like, it helps. Certainly it puts them in a better situation than it would if they were just sitting at home eating Twinkies. But it's not necessarily a guarantee that come the regular season. And I think one of the things I will say is you got to remember the things that matter from September to January happen from September to January, not necessarily from March through August, right? It's a part of the equation, but it's not sort of a deterministic direct causation between, oh, I did this amount of work in June, and that means come November, I'm going to be able to do this exactly. I'll give you a concrete example to illustrate what I'm talking about. I remember back in 2013, a lot of people argued that the fact that the Falcons gave Tony Gonzalez basically that entire offseason off to spend time with his family, it really screwed up chemistry and did a number of things that you'll hear similar people arguing about Julio Jones' missing time and how it's going to have this very disadvantageous effect on the Falcons as they gear up for the regular season. And we knew in 2013, the Falcons got off to a 1-4 start and sort of, you know, tanked their season. And then injuries sort of really, you know, Julio got hurt. And then basically any chance they had of turning around their season pretty much evaporated. But I would counter that a much more significant factor to why the Falcons started 1-4, rather than Tony Gonzalez's absence, had more to do with the fact that, hey, in week 3 against the Dolphins, Joplo Bartu couldn't cover Charles Clay on a big-time catch on a third down that set up the game-winning go-ahead touchdown for the Dolphins late in that fourth quarter. Or the fact that in the fourth quarter against the Patriots the following week, the Falcons let Kimbrough effing Tompkins convert a third 19, which was immediately followed by LeGarrette Blount running 47 yards untouched for a touchdown that put the Patriots up 2 scores in the fourth quarter and really sort of put the game away for the Falcons, even though they got really close at the end. You know, imagine if they got off the field in that instance and went down the field and scored and cut the lead into, I think they would have tied the game at that point, 17-17, had they done that, made those plays. Or the following week in the fourth quarter, it's weird how the fourth quarter stuff keeps rearing its ugly head, that the following against the Jets, a rookie quarterback by the name of Geno Smith drove his team 55 yards down the field in under 90 seconds, not facing a single amount of a major amount of pass rush pressure to set up a game-winning field goal for that team in week 5. And so the Falcons lost 3 games, you know, basically because they crumbled in the fourth quarter. Now, if you think Tony Gonzalez not showing up that offseason was the cause of the Falcons crumbling in the fourth quarter because they didn't have good pass rushers, because they hadn't really invested in the pass rush since signing Ray Edwards, and we know that didn't turn out well for them, or the fact that they kind of lost a bunch of their linebackers by the name of Sean Weatherspoon due to injury, that led to, you know, them being forced to play guys like Paul Warlow and Joplo Bartu early in the season, largely in part because draft picks like Akeem Dent didn't really work out, or, you know, any of the other various reasons that were more causative or correlative to why the team struggled to that 1-4 start. But again, if you think that was because Tony Gonzalez didn't show up that offseason, then again, I don't know what I can tell you at this point in time that's going to convince you otherwise of that belief. And I would love to, if you are still convinced, like, it's not to say that Tony Gonzalez's absence had nothing to do with that, but I think it did have probably a very infinitesimal impact on the season. But I would love to see that cork board that you have up in your bedroom, where you have all the yarns and the pins, you know, connecting a picture of Tony Gonzalez to all the things that caused the Falcons' downfall at the start of that 2013 season, not to mention the fact that 8 of their starters happened to miss time during that 5-game stretch due to injury. You know, I don't know. But again, Tony Gonzalez not showing up on time, hey man, that really, really derailed the entire Falcons season. So again, I mean, that's basically my stance on the issue. Julio missing time, whatever. I don't think it's going to matter come September, but I'm sure people are already getting their cork boards ready to go and putting the yarn up and connecting the dots in their sort of weird, eccentric behavior that we see in the movies with serial killers and police investigations and whatnot. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, until then, guys, if you want to provide your feedback, your thoughts on the Julio Jones situation. Oh, and I should let you guys know, you know, I think most of you guys that listen to this podcast probably get it, but I'm going to continue to troll the Falcons and the fan base about this Julio Jones situation by playing it up, the drama factor, on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at FalFans. If you have any podcast related feedback, just let me know when you tweet to that. But if it's podcast related, just go ahead and send it to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Of course, you can find us on Facebook, Locked On Falcons. Email address is LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Of course, you can leave a comment as well at LockedOnFalcons.com as well as FalFans.com, where the show is posted daily. If you want to provide your insight into this whole Julio Jones situation, whatever the case may be, we have future episodes involving, we're going to be breaking down undrafted free agents. We're going to have future episodes looking at the off seasons of NFC South teams as well as AFC North teams in the future this month. We'll get into training camp battles and positional previews come July, and we'll continue to do fan talks each week. And if you want to get in the fan talk action, if you want to talk to me and tell me how I'm wrong about this or that, I'm sure you will let me know and send an email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Give me your contact information. If you have a Skype account, give me the username. If you don't, just give me a phone number and give me your availability over the next 4 to 6 weeks as we get geared up for training camp for you to join me on this Locked On Falcons podcast. Appreciate you guys listening, and until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.